Unemployment nationally is 7.6%. Here in Iowa, much better than most places, only 4.6%. This hour, landing a job and making a living wage in 2013. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we look at why college students are starting their careers earlier these days by completing several internships by the time they graduate. Then we'll talk with Iowa State University labor economist Peter Orazum about the role of temporary workers in our economy. We also want to hear from you this hour. How did you get your foot in the door to your career? Conversation starts after this news. Unemployment nationally is at 7.6%. Here in Iowa, we have things a bit better than the national average. 4.6% is our statewide average. This hour, landing a job, making a living wage in 2013. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Iowa State University labor economist Peter Orazum about the role of temporary workers in our economy, temporary workers, freelancers, focus in our second half hour. First of all, though, landing a job in this tough economy is no easy feat, especially for college students and recent grads. They often spend weeks scouring online job boards, polishing cover letters, blasting out resumes, sometimes to no avail. But what they really need to do is get an internship, according to a new survey. It turns out that may be the easiest way to secure a full-time job. 69% of companies with 100 or more employees offered full-time jobs to their interns in 2012. It's a new survey by internships.com. Joining me now to talk about internships, Mark Peltz, Associate Dean and Director of Career Development at Grinnell College. Mark Peltz, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, students graduating from college with more internships under their belts, why are we seeing this trend?
You know, in today's job market, there's real no question that employers are really giving preference to candidates who not only have a really strong academic background, that has not changed, but they are really giving preference to candidates that bring not only relevant experience, but job-ready skills to the workplace. And this kind of experience and these job-ready skills are really the best place to acquire those are by way of a summer internship.
Mm-hmm. We want to hear from our listeners this first half hour, mostly about internships. What was it worth it, that internship that you had? Did it prove to be a valuable stepping stone to a permanent job? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm wondering, Mark Peltz, if if all students are aware of this. I've taught many undergraduate classes, and I was very surprised semester after semester how many undergrads, even juniors and seniors who hadn't done internships and weren't or didn't seem to be that aware about how important they've become. Do you think there's a lag here?
You know what? I think that there may have been, you know, over the last certainly decade, internships have become increasingly popular. What we're finding actually at Grinnell is an increasing number of students in their first and second year of college wanting to do an internship. And in part, it's, I think, reflective of when you think about, for example, this incoming crop of first-year students, and Grinnell enrolls predominantly the traditional 18 to 22 year old, that really defines our population. And so when you think about these students that are just coming right out of high school, the job market and the economy, they've been hearing nothing but bad news, generally speaking, since they were in middle school. And so I think they're bringing a very different orientation to their college experience. They know that they need to do well academically. And certainly the students we attract to Grinnell have a pretty rich history in performing well academically. But they also know that they're going to have to get some experience on top of it. Mm-hmm. They've seen too many people, whether it's in their immediate family, a neighbor, a friend, who's been negatively affected by the job market. So they know that they're going to need to do different things to ensure they're ready to compete once graduation comes.
Mm-hmm. So maybe 5 or 10 years ago, a student would be more likely of the mindset to say, oh, got a college degree. That's a good ticket to the first job. Now we're recognizing that's not enough.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that historically the bachelor's degree in this case was essentially your ticket to line up and compete. Now it's not going to be enough to win the race.
Mm-hmm. How do students get internships? What are the tricks there?
You know, we really encourage students to leave no stone unturned. There's very popular large organizations that have pretty well-established internship programs. But, you know, we see a number of students that really find organizations that are engaged in the kind of work that really inspires them. And they approach those organizations and oftentimes will even propose internships just because they want to get more exposure and just get a deeper understanding of the nature of what it might be like to work in that particular industry. So there's lots of different ways to pursue and secure an internship.
Mark Peltz, let's talk to one person from Grinnell who has been successful in landing internships. Joining us by phone is Opwe Yemi Awe.
Yes.
If I got that correct, hi to you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I understand you go by Opie Awe.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, you're a Grinnell junior. Mm-hmm. You've interned, or you're interning currently for the U.S. State Department.
Mm-hmm.
You're 20 years old, mm-hmm. Grinnell College. You're studying international affairs. Tell us about this latest internship you have. Are we talking to you in Washington?
You are. You're talking to me at my office and behind my computer. I currently intern with the Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. So this is a special office that was created to deal with the regional issues of those two nations. I don't do as much per se as like the desk officers or the senior advisors, but I attend meetings, I take notes, I'm helping them clear papers throughout the building. So it's been really great. I'm going into my seventh week now, so mm-hmm. it's been excellent.
What have you learned? What are the most valuable things you've learned in these 7 weeks?
I have learned that working for the government is actually something that I would consider as a future career. I've learned that mm-hmm. the connections and the engagement with civil society is much more direct than I had originally anticipated. I have learned a lot about sort of the sort of structure that I seek when I'm looking for a potential job. Last year, I did an internship that was, you know, pretty small, decentralized, and so I knew that I wanted to try something else. And so seeing how organizationally State Department works, that was a personal goal of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned a lot about, regional issues. I've learned more about Sudan, South Sudan, how international organizations, the African Union, the UN, various organizations, how they work. And it's been great. Really great.
Now, you say now you actually think you like working for the government. That was not your view going in?
That was not my view going in. I guess I watched too much TV growing up, but I just thought that working
for the government. What were your expectations that turned you off?
I thought it was going to be really like slow and bureaucratic, and you just sort of sit and you have no agency and no ability to say anything because you're just one little cog in this overwhelming machine. Growing up, it's always been the bureaucracy. I had no idea what that meant early on, but now I have a better understanding of it, and it's not as terrible as it seems. So really, like, having those myths demystified has been really important for me.
Now, last year, you had an interesting internship as well. Is it the Hovde Foundation?
Yeah, the Hovde Foundation.
Hovde Foundation in Washington. How was that different?
That was really different because this was sort of the corporate social responsibility aspect of a financial organization. And so even though they were well-supported financially, the organization was essentially two people and interns that they brought in throughout the year. And so it was much more sort of do your own thing. One had to take a greater deal of initiative to really get out of it what one wanted. And it was just different in seeing how they were connected to the organization, their funding. So that organizationally it was very different, but also the work that I was doing was much different. It's an NGO. They partner with local organizations local international organizations.
Mm-hmm. Mark Peltz, when we listen to Opie's stories there, her internship this summer and last summer, she's really learning about a lot about the work world, where she fits in, and a lot about herself, isn't she? And that's what it's about.
That's exactly right. And when you think about a student like Opie, she's now she's a junior at Grinnell. But the thing that I think is really reflective in her experience and her story is the fact that she's starting her third year in college, having both of these experiences under her belt. And in addition to the just the practical skills and the experience and the much richer understanding that she's developing as a result of these experiences, this really alters a perspective that she can bring to apply to her academic learning. I mean, we always want students, regardless of where they're working, whether it's whether you're an engineering student at Iowa State or you're an international studies student at Grinnell, we want you drawing linkages between what you're learning in the classroom and the world of work.
Mm-hmm.
It just helps. It brings a different sense of meaning and purpose to your identity as a college student.
I imagine the motivation, you get a sharper focus. If you say, I don't like this or I do like that, you know better what to hone in on in your education as you continue through your junior and senior years.
Absolutely, and there's nothing more anxiety-reducing for a college student than to develop a strong sense of purpose as graduation approaches.
Mm-hmm. Opie, did this reduce your anxiety as you contemplate a career?
Absolutely. It's definitely reduced my anxiety, and I think it's also sort of like what Mark was saying. It's allowed me to articulate sort of what I'm looking for. I know what I do like, what I don't like, and so when I'm entering into a new experience, the quicker that I say that, the better that they're able to tailor my experience to help me learn and grow. And so that's also been really impactful. And, I mean, just that ability to say what I want, I mean, that goes, you know, in my academics and work that I do on campus. So it's been really great.
Let's have Ann Owens join us. She's in our Ames studio, volunteer coordinator for youth and shelter services in Ames. Hi, Ann.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Now, you're here to deliver us the perspective of someone who supervises, places interns with the youth and shelter services in Ames.
Yes.
How many interns do you look after?
We have anywhere from 17 to 45 interns throughout the school year and summer, just depending on the term and the interest in volunteering in our programs.
Wow. So you have a lot of people applying to fill those many positions.
It is. It is. We're in Ames, so the majority of ours come from Ames, but we're close enough to Des Moines and over the summer, they come from all over. So,
mm-hmm. When they walk in the door, you have an applicant walk in the door. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for?
The first thing I look for is what they're interested in and their motivation for why they want the internship. What class it fits, because we run such a wide variety of programs. Whether they're looking for the administration experience of it or the hands-on delivery of the program, and also what their requirements are. Do they have to have an independent project they create for their internship? What are their hour requirements for the credit? Is it for credit, or is it just they're out looking for something and they're calling it an intern? They're looking to volunteer and call it an internship so they generate the experience for it. So mm-hmm. Their motivation is the first thing I look at. Then it's the practicals of when are they available. What experience do they have and their comfort level with working with the diverse populations that we work with, and those sorts of things. Because you still have to keep in mind they're applicants. They have to work in a group setting. They have to be able to be independently driven to complete work and things like that. So it's the same as a paid position. I'm just looking at it. My payment is food, friends, and experience.
So you do not pay your interns?
No.
Per se?
All our interns are unpaid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mark Peltz, you might have a broader view of that. Do interns, most of them get paid or not?
You know what? I think that the organization that you cited earlier that conducted this study, I think it was internshipstar.com, they've done some other work. And I think their organization actually predicts about half of all internships are unpaid. And I think that that's been the case for the last several years. So,
mm-hmm. OP, can I ask if you're being paid there?
I am not being paid here, nor was I paid last year.
Mm-hmm. How are you supporting yourself?
Grinnell.
Grinnell, okay.
Yeah, Grinnell offers a really generous through their career development office and other offices. They provide intern funding, and that has I mean, I'm not getting rich off of it. It's not intended to, like, sort of, you know, bankroll my life, but it's been really good with helping pay for food and transportation and the essentials.
We're talking about internships this first half hour and the role that they play in landing, keeping a job in 2013, perhaps that first permanent job. On our Facebook page, Nate made a note. He's working as an IT intern at Principal Financial, a great place to intern, says Nate on our Facebook page. Let's go to Della, who's joining us by phone from Iowa City. Hi, Della. Do you have an internship now?
Yes, I actually work for a state construction entity.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into that internship?
Because I had a previous internship the last summer.
Mm-hmm. So you are in engineering?
Yeah, I graduated last semester with a degree in civil engineering.
Mm-hmm. How important is an internship like the one you have right now to getting a permanent job in that field, civil engineering?
It's very important. The whole field is very fierce as far as competition goes. If you do not graduate with an internship, just for example, most of my graduating class, if you had an internship, you were able to at least get your foot in the door. If you did not have an internship on your resume, most employers won't look at you.
Mm-hmm. Was there, do you believe, sufficient awareness in your class? How important that was? Yeah?
Yes. At University of Iowa, they do a very great job of telling us, you know, encouraging us to get internships, that it's very professional. It's for the connections you need to make in the industry.
Della, do you get paid?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Mark Peltz, what are your thoughts on paid versus unpaid internships?
Well, I think that you have to kind of acknowledge them for what they are. I was a first-generation college student. I devoted my summers to working and saving money to help, you know, pay for all those incidental expenses going through college and contributing, you know, to those expenses. And I have to say that, you know, unpaid experiences certainly privilege certain kinds of students. I mean, if you have the means to and or the connections to spend a summer in New York City interning for an organization that doesn't pay their interns, there's a certain kind of student that has those connections. Either geographically they have a support system in place such that they could spend a summer not earning a wage, or they have family resources or otherwise connections allowing them to do that.
And so we're skewing these internships towards what, white, middle, and upper class families and students.
I think that is a very legitimate concern, and something that and as Opie kind of alluded to this is something that at Grinnell we are very cognizant of. We view these unpaid experiences as essential in terms of helping our graduates prepare for life after college and acquiring those necessary skills and experiences. But we don't want students who choose to come to Grinnell to have to forgo those opportunities if they don't necessarily have the personal means. So we try to help them out as best we can.
Now, Mark Hestia on our Facebook page says interns, temp workers, usually treated as slaves to benefit the company, not to give you learning experience. So the question is, when is an intern being exploited? We had a recent lawsuit, did we not, Mark Peltz, mm-hmm. the Fox Searchlight lawsuit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what we're seeing is the Fair Labor Standards Act outlines essentially six criteria that organizations can use as a test to determine whether or not they have the ability to not pay their interns. And really, I think the way that I think certainly in the case with Fox Searchlight Films, Pictures, what the judge was looking at there is they were looking at this balance. To what extent did the internship benefit the student, the intern, versus benefit the organization? And as soon as that imbalance tips toward the organization, that's where I think organizations are going to be found responsible for not complying with not satisfying those six criteria.
Does it matter if the interns are working for credit? Is that an excuse not to pay for the interns' work time?
I don't think so. I mean, based on the most recent court cases that have come through, the credit bearing issue doesn't seem to be isn't a sufficient safeguard to the organization, which some will add to their criteria that if you want to intern with our organization, you must earn credit.
Ann Owens in Ames, what do you have to say about this question about exploitation versus getting a learning experience and benefiting both the young individual and the company? Or
It's definitely a balancing act. We're a nonprofit organization, and we, all total, we run about 2 volunteers or interns to every staff person in our paid positions. So we can't do all we do without volunteers and interns, and the interns are a crucial component of our programming. It is a balancing act. We, as a nonprofit, can't pay them. We just don't have the budget, and we have a hard time finding funds for that. We have to be very cognizant when we're working with interns that they're balancing their intern, their credit, and their career and their academics at the same time. And a lot of times their schedules reflect that they have to go take 1 or 2 part-time jobs to balance it out and afford the internship. We really do try to stress that it's a learning experience, and we try to work with them to tie in the education, all the things they've been learning in the classroom. This is their opportunity to see how it ties together.
Mm-hmm. Do you have pressures in your organization? You have to get things done, and work that's to be done that necessarily is not lending itself to a learning experience. It's tempting to give that to an intern,
but
you've got to resist that, right?
It is, and it's a constant education on our end as employees and supervisors that we can't just keep passing them off. In the other part of mine is as a volunteer coordinator, when they keep coming to me and saying, I want interns to do this. And it's answering the phones and filings. I'm like, I don't have an intern for filing, but I have a volunteer who can come in to file.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And really stressing the emphasis, the education part to the supervisors about the balance Mark was saying, according to the Fair Labor Standards. That test is a huge resource to me to help explain to my coworkers and volunteer supervisors the difference of what they need to be aware of.
Before we have to end this conversation with you all, let's go to Mark in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mark. You've been listening. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm both an intern and now I'm a hiring manager many years later, and we've included interns. I work at GoDaddy. And I really encourage the students out there thinking about possibly looking into internships to do that. It's one of the most valuable part of my college education was the time I spent interning. And for those managers or companies out there that might be considering offering internships, I also encourage them. It's a wonderful opportunity to get fresh blood into your organization. If it's an extended period of internship, we have a fellow working with us right now, it's a 6-month internship. And we'll have a great opportunity to find out, is this the kind of person we want to bring in on a permanent basis? Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to get a permanent job. You come in, you work right in the company, you learn a lot. And honestly, if the person works out, we'd be crazy not to try to keep those people on after the internship is over with.
Mm-hmm. Mark and Cedar Rapids, thank you for that view. We've got 30 seconds left. I want to very interested in OPLA's future. Opie, do you have a sharp focus on what you want to do already as a junior at Grinnell?
I think it's narrowing. I definitely am thinking about going to law school, working for an international organization, dealing with West African affairs. That's sort of big and broadly what I want to do.
It sounds like you're getting great experiences
you're
very energized. We wish you all the best in getting
a
great
much.
Career. Opie Awe, thank you very much. Mark Peltz of Grinnell College, thank you. And Ann Owens, Volunteer Coordinator for the Youth and Shelter Services in Ames, thank you for coming into our studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear from Peter Orazum. He's an ISU, Iowa State University labor economist. We're going to pivot a little bit to talk about temporary workers. Have you ever been a temporary worker? Perhaps you're a temporary worker right now. What do you want to tell us about that experience? Is it worth it? Is it a stepping stone? Do you hope it to be a stepping stone to a permanent position? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're back in just a few minutes with more as we talk about getting a job, keeping a job in 2013. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In this hour, we're talking about landing a job, making a living wage in this economy in 2013. Now, unemployment nationally is quite high, 7.6%. Here in Iowa, much better than most places, 4.6% is the average across the state. Next, we want to learn more about the role of temporary workers in our economy. Perhaps you're currently employed as a temporary worker, or were a temp worker in the past. Did you like it? Do you like it? Tell us about your experience. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or leave a comment or a question on our Facebook page. We also have an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining me now, Peter Orazim. He is a labor economist and professor of economics at Iowa State University. Peter Orazim, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Let's make sure we know what we're talking about. Define a temporary worker.
Well, a temporary worker from the federal government's perspective is someone who's primarily employed by a temporary service agency, and that temporary service agency places their workers for individual firms. So technically, you're employed by the agency and not by the firm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know there's some confusion here, because what is then the difference between a temporary worker and a self-employed person? The agency is not in between?
Most of the self-employed workers are effectively their own agency. And so they are running placement activities on their own. But beyond that, you could have the same person working through a temporary agency for some of their work and then self-employed for some of the rest of their work. So the distinction to some extent is driven by the Bureau of Labor Statistics and not necessarily by what people actually end up doing.
Let me get your insights on the perspectives involved here, the perspective of the temporary worker, the perspective of the business who hires the temporary worker, and then we'll expand and zoom out to the economy at large and how the economy at large makes use of temporary workers. Let's talk about the individual. What are the pros and cons of being a temp worker?
Well, one of the big reasons for the rise of temporary work is workers who are having trouble signaling their skills to the labor market. And temporary service agencies have two important roles. One is that they will place their workers and certify their workers to the firm. And secondly, the vast majority of them also provide training at very low cost or no cost to the individual. So if you have someone who is having trouble finding work, oftentimes they will access a temporary service agency in part to smooth that transition into employment.
Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like it's sort of a stamp of approval, something that a business can look to as something to be desired.
Right. And if you're looking at it from the firm's perspective, one of the reasons they will hire through a temporary help agency is they're having trouble trying to figure out who to hire in the labor force. They're finding it expensive to distinguish between potentially productive workers and workers that they're going to have to dismiss down the road. And it's costly to dismiss workers, mm-hmm. but it's not costly to dismiss someone who's employed by somebody else. And so much of the rise of temporary service agencies from the firm's perspective is lowering their risk of new hires.
So can you tell us who would be a typical temporary worker? What sort of person?
Well, as mentioned, it's people who are having trouble signaling their skills to the labor market. So atypically, temporary workers are young. They are less educated. So high school dropouts are particularly likely to become temporary workers. And minorities are particularly likely to become temporary workers. And it's likely to be related to this issue that if firms are unsure of your skill levels, they find it easier to hire people on a temporary basis and then regularize the ones that they find are productive.
What's the pay like for a temp worker compared to doing the same work being hired fully?
Well, it sort of depends on what you're doing. But if you look at the biggest increases in temporary help recently, it's for professional jobs. So one of the fastest growing areas is in legal services. Now, if you know anything about law schools, there's a perception that law schools are producing more lawyers than firms can easily employ. So a lot of new lawyers are actually finding their first work through temporary help agencies, and they end up being paid on the average about $90,000. So it's not on an annual basis. And so the pay is not necessarily comparable to all attorneys, but it's certainly not that far below that.
Are there situations where what you've just described, a temporary worker may prefer to remain a temporary worker and go from job to job as that?
Well, there are reasons why that flexibility may be useful. Now, a lot of us don't like that flexibility. And in fact, I should say that temporary service workers are about 2% of the total labor force. So they're not a huge fraction. I think mm-hmm. the peak was at 2.7 million people. But a lot of people will be temporary service workers for only a relatively short period of time. It turns out that on a monthly basis, somewhere between 11 and 18% of temporary service workers end up being employed permanently then by the firm that they're working for on a temporary help basis. Mm-hmm. And that is, in fact, how a lot of firms now are handling their new hires, is they hire exclusively through temporary service agencies with the idea that the best of those workers are going to be the ones that they're going to hire permanently.
So it's recognized by both parties as very often a stepping stone.
It's very often a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be permanently a temporary service worker, it's probably better to then become self-employed so you're not paying somebody, in essence, to serve as the go-between.
Mm-hmm. Legal services, an area you mentioned. What other sectors do you find many temp workers?
Well, I can mention some of the ones that are growing the most rapidly are in the professional area. So health service, financial services, and engineering services are three of the fastest growing on the professional side. And their salaries are well above the national median for salaries on an annual basis.
So what is spurring this growth, especially in those sectors?
Well, I think some of it is if you look at who generally ends up in the temporary service workers among the professional workers, it's going to be people who are relatively young. So they are finding it difficult to find a permanent job, and they're finding this as the go-between option.
Mm-hmm.
The second are people who, are, in fact, are trying to only work for short periods. So if I could make a personal note, my brother-in-law is effectively working as a chief financial officer for a new startup in Boston. He doesn't want to have a long-term job. He's 62 years old. He's retired a couple times now, but when he finds the right place and it's a firm that's trying to go from, say, initial startup to a public offering, he really finds those six-month to one-year jobs interesting, but he isn't looking for a permanent placement.
Is it good to be a temp worker at sometimes boom times and not so good in bad times, or vice versa?
Well, firms will often use temporary workers as a means of adjusting to fluctuations in the demand for their services. And so firms will hire through temp agencies when they get a surge in demand for their product, and then let those people go during slack times. If you look at recessions, one of the early signals that a recession is coming is employment for temporary workers begins to decline. And in each of the last two recessions, in 2001 and 2007, you see a sudden drop in demand for temporary service workers about 1 year prior to the drop in the overall labor market.
Mm. So what are we seeing right now?
Right now, you're seeing an increase in demand for temporary service workers, and in fact, that started before the overall turnaround in the labor market. And so, to some extent, temporary employment of temporary service workers is like a canary in the minefield, right? It's an early signal of potential problems. The nice thing is, the opposite of that, it's also an early signal that the labor market may be rebounding. Firms are nervous about making new hires on a permanent basis because they're not sure that the recession is over, so they initially make forays hiring people on a temporary basis, and they plan to regularize those workers if it looks like the recovery is firmly in play.
Peter Orazm, a labor economist and professor of economics at Iowa State University in Ames, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
I'm joined now by Brian Berry. He's a human resources manager for the Palmer Group. The Palmer Group is a West Des Moines-based staffing agency that provides temporary and direct placements. Brian Berry, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We just heard from Peter Orazum, the labor economist, that these temp workers, the need for them is often an early indicator of an economy picking up steam, turning the corner. What have you seen recently? Is that, in fact, the case in the Des Moines, West Des Moines area?
Yeah, I believe so. We've definitely seen an uptick in a lot of our business, and it kind of goes across industries.
So what are the best sectors to find a job in the Des Moines, West Des Moines area when we're looking at your agency?
We've seen has been a trend up in the IT arena, as well as the manufacturing, which is good to see because that has not been a good area over the last few years. Those two have been real hot. The accounting area has picked up quite a bit as well. But with some of the large organizations in central Iowa, anything mortgage banking related has continued to be hot and continue to pick up mm-hmm. based on what the interest rates are doing.
How many of your temporary workers do, in fact, find permanent employment through the job?
A lot. Percent-wise, I would say probably 85 to 90%, and that's
wow.
just a guess, but the trend has been not necessarily as much starting out that way as attempt to hire from the opening of a position, but the opportunity to get in there and prove yourself and make connections and show your value, it has a great impact on companies' ability to make something happen to get you hired, because at that point there's not a lot of risk in hiring that person mm-hmm. for an organization. So it's a very high percentage. I think people are looking at it as a lot more viable option at all levels of positions to make things happen from an employment standpoint.
I understand, Brian Berry, your Palmer Group just celebrated 15 years in business. Congratulations.
Correct. Thank you.
And thank you for this conversation. Take care.
You too. Thanks.
Are you or have you ever been a temporary worker? What do you remember most about that experience? As we end this hour, we want to reach out to you, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, and you can tweet us as well if you'd like, at IPR Talk. We've had some action on our Facebook page. Eric on our Facebook page writes, "Everyone should understand temporary workers generally exist for one reason, to move the liabilities from the employer to the temporary agency. There are a few cases where temporary employees are truly temporary, but I think that is relatively rare," writes Eric. "However, temporary work is a quick, easy way to get a job in almost any city. Move to a new town and start working in a few days." Christina in Marion emailed us. She writes, "I used to be a temp and have had both good and bad experiences. The bad ones included getting let go from a position because the receptionist did not like me. The good ones included a few that eventually led to permanent employment." Interesting. Thank you for that feedback. And let's talk briefly before we end the hour with Kathy Landon. She's a self-employed content producer, a project coordinator, and self-described lone wolf, I understand. Kathy Landon in our studio. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us more about your work. What does a typical day look like, or are there all kinds of different typical days?
Well, when you're a freelancer, when you're self-employed, there really isn't a typical day, because in order to sort of keep your head above water, you normally have to do a lot of different things and have a lot of different capabilities and be valuable in a lot of different ways.
So, you've got a menu out there, and people pick from that menu.
I really do, and I have different networks for different things on the menu. So one of the things I do, for example, I run a business videotaping depositions. So I get hired by attorneys to videotape depositions a lot of times if they're coming in from out of town, if it's an executive here that needs to get on record for something. I have equipment. I show up. I tape it. I send them a copy. And that's something I just do on contract. I work with a court reporting agency who calls me up when they need me.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like bread and butter.
It really is. Everybody's mm-hmm. always going to be suing each other. We hope. So somebody always needs me.
Right. Okay.
But what something else? I also get hired to coordinate video productions. So, for example, right now I'm working on a project that is a corporate compliance training for a large corporation. So they have to do it every year. Everybody in the corporation has to watch do the training and get certified. So somebody has to put that together. And that means I'm, you know, hiring talent, coordinating scripts, getting locations, putting together the whole production as a whole. So that's which is a whole different ballgame than showing up and videotaping a deposition for sure.
Right. Now, you describe yourself as a lone wolf. Is this hired gun approach for everyone, or did you find out at one point in your life, this really suits me, I like this?
I would definitely say it's not for everyone. It certainly isn't something I went off into the world thinking I would do. I was kind of thrown into it at the time, you know, when the economy started to fall apart. I was laid off from my job and was sort of thrust into the world of being self-employed. Mm-hmm. They ended up needing us to finish projects that were already on the books, and so I was hired on contract by that company, and that's how it kind of, you know, started out for me. It was easy because they were already going to hire me. And then what I always tell people is you go from being unemployed to being self-employed by printing out business cards. It's really all you have to do.
What about word of mouth? Is that perhaps the most important way of not only just entering the self-employment, but to sustain it and build it?
I would say absolutely. You have to have a network. You have to have people you've worked with, people who know you, who believe in what you do, who believe in your capabilities. You have to stand up, you know, and be able to do the things you're telling people. But nobody's going to just pick up the phone and start, I wonder if there's somebody who can put a video on the internet, because nobody's going to want to write you a check to put a video on the internet if they don't know whether you're capable of doing it. So it is about building a network, and you have to kind of have yourself, you know, I approach the world as a video producer, so I produce videos and I put them online so that people who know me as a video producer. And it's very important having a network and supporting your network as much as you want them to support you.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been doing this self-employed work?
I have been self-employed since 2008, so it's 5 years now, and then I was self-employed for a couple of years before 2005 when I first moved here.
Were there nights without sleep when you were filled with trepidation, like, because you said you were sort of forced in this direction, that you didn't really know if it was going to work out?
Absolutely. There always are. I actually, the second quarter this year for me was fairly slow. And the problem with a slow time is you have time to think and you start to worry, should I be doing something different? And usually just about the time I start to put a bunch of irons in the fire to make something happen, then everything starts happening. And suddenly, like this week, I'm ridiculously busy and think, oh, my gosh, now I've started a bunch of fires. And how am I going to put them out?
You haven't used the word feast or famine, but I assume that's kind of what you're getting
very at. Much. You go about 2 days of the phone doesn't ring and you think, oh, my goodness, I'll never work in this town again. And about 20 minutes later, the phone rings and you're
right.
Fine.
I can see that. It's not something for everyone. A little bit like Vegas, perhaps.
Yes.
Judith.
Yes.
Judith is joining us on the line. Hi, Judith. Where are you calling from?
Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids. So, what has been your work situation you want to share?
Well, I was talking about the temporary agency and how it's a great way to, if you find yourself suddenly unemployed, laid off, as I did in 2009. The bad economy, a nice stepping stone to what could be a new career.
Mm-hmm. And that worked out.
I went from project management. I worked for a translation company who was hit hard by General Motors, bankruptcy, laid off a bunch of people. Within a few days, I had a temporary job doing web content writing. I had a journalism degree that I hadn't used for 20 years, although I'd done some technical writing, tried web content writing, and worked at a local, large, small website producer, doing that for a couple years, and am now in website sales for a large Cedar Rapids healthcare website developer.
Judith, thank you for sharing your experience. Let's go to Bill in Ames. Not much time, Bill. What can you share with us as we finish up this hour?
I've been a temporary worker, per hour worker, whatever you want, consultant, whatever you wish to call it, for about 7 years. After having been laid off by some of the most wonderful firms in the world multiple times. Uh-huh. And it really is a stopgap that has allowed me to maintain In some cases, make the income I was making as a full-time director, and then other cases, make enough to scrimp by and in between several different occasions, experience unemployment.
Mm-hmm. And that's changed you, I assume, Bill?
No, right now. Well, right now I'm still a consultant working at a company that I hope will take me on full time.
Okay.
But we'll have to wait and see. It has ups and downs. Your contacts are critical. And I think one of the big changes, at least within IT, is that many, many companies are, in addition to having gone through the outsourcing effort, are now looking at hiring consultants to come in to do the job. And they've been reducing their paid full-time employees because consultants for things like project management are looked at now as a commodity.
Bill in Ames, thank you for your insights as we finish up this hour. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye now. And thanks to Kathy Landon, who came into our studio, self-employed content producer, project coordinator, and self-described lone wolf. How can people find you, Kathy?
Google Kathy Landon on the internet and just enjoy what you find, because it's mostly a bunch of silliness and a lot of fun videos.
Kathy Landon, Kathy with a Y, L-A-N-D-I-N, just to make sure people do that right.
Google it.
Okay, Kathy, thank you. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. On Monday, tune in this hour. We'll be talking about life behind bars and facing the end of life behind bars, growing old and dying in prison, part of our corrections series. Tune in Monday over the noon hour. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend.